away, John Stepling, author and commentator. Welcome, both of you, to the program. I'd like to start it off with Robert. I mean, why is it that neither the U.S. Nor the Zionist regime, neither one of them is a part of the ICC's Rome Statute?
This is because they have no respect or regard for international law. They want to be able to commit crimes in violation of international law, crimes against humanity at will, in order to expand their empires, and therefore they have not recognized the ICC. They do not want to be obligated to adhere to any rules, any rules of conduct that are established internationally, so that they can go about doing the kind of destruction that we're seeing on the screen right now, the destruction of Gaza, which Israel is perpetrating with complete U.S. financing and diplomatic cover. So these are two rogue nations. The United States is very powerful, and it lends its power to Israel, which are not really part of the global community in the sense that they have respect for the community and want to be reasonable members of it.
Well, John, is it that neither regime has a problem with committing any of those four major international crimes that were mentioned?
No, they have a long record of committing more crimes. The ICC has no mechanism by which it can arrest or apprehend anybody. So this is largely a symbolic statement. There's something like 20 warrants outstanding warrants that the people named have ignored over the last 15 years. Israel, if they issue one for Netanyahu, they will ignore it also. They've already said they're going to ignore it. They've already said they don't recognize the court. And admittedly, this is a pretty politicized court anyway. They issued a warrant for Putin. So this is more to be read as a kind of political barometer for the changes in opinion. There are protests at just countless universities in the United States, highly organized protests that won't go away. These things have an effect. Public opinion has been overwhelmingly against Israel globally, even in the United States. And most tellingly, perhaps, last week, Naomi Klein wrote an op-ed at The Guardian, which is the mouthpiece for the liberal establishment, and the title was Zionism Must End. This right. was a kind of remarkable occurrence. We had not seen anything like that, but I suspect this is part of a damage control, in a sense, from the United States. They recognize Biden is way behind in the polls. They need to do something to win back voters to the Democratic Party, who are seen to be party to the genocide Israel is committing. Everybody knows in the whole world that Israel is committing war crimes, committing genocide. This is hardly a secret. It's the most documented and filmed genocide in history. So, what all the moving parts are in this sort of management of optics remains to be seen. But it's not completely insignificant. Certainly, it says the United States and Israel are becoming pariahs globally.
Well, Robert, your perspective, we've just heard what John thought, basically, about the ICC's arrest warrants. But in your perspective, does it carry any weight at all? For example, if an arrest warrant is issued for Netanyahu, would it be affected? Would the regime be affected in any way?
It will be in some ways. Of course, once an arrest warrant is issued, any country that has signed on to the ICC, and it's over 140 countries, is obligated under law to arrest anybody who sets foot in their country who has an arrest warrant. Now, whether or not this will be done remains to be seen, but it will pressure Netanyahu and those others who may be issued warrants. It may curtail their travel. It will certainly put a damper on their ability to globe trot around the world trying to seek additional support for their criminal regime. Now, if they do get arrested in some country, then that would be unprecedented. It would be really a wonderful thing to see. It would give the ICC a lot more credibility than it has currently. But that's something that we have to see. The arrest warrants haven't been issued yet. But there are reports that Netanyahu is very concerned about this. And that in itself is something.
Well, I mean, as John said, optics are everything. And even that, perhaps, with it even being talked about, the possibility of that warrant being issued, perhaps it's problematic for Netanyahu. But, John, your perspective in general, I mean, what does this say about Washington? Because we have reports now that even right now the U.S. is trying its best not to allow this arrest warrant to be issued by the ICC. I mean, what kind of message? Because you talked about optics. So let's look at that. What kind of message is that actually sending to, if you want to say, the Democratic voters or to the other Americans or to the world? I mean, is it that Palestinian lives are does not matter as much? I mean, what is it that they're what is it that they're saying?
Yeah, it's a good question in a sense, but it's the same question I would apply to this op-ed by Naomi Klein. This is somebody who is, you know, in bed with the Rockefeller Foundation. She's a part of the World Economic Forum. She's, you know, an establishment figure. And she writes this op-ed saying Zionism must end. She does not say, however, that there needs to be a Palestinian state, that Palestine has endured a 75-year brutal occupation. No, history is kind of erased. She even implies that the current genocide is to be laid at the feet of Donald Trump and Jared Kushner. It's very strange in that sense. Mm-hmm. But this is because the protests and opinion, and there's more and more people of influence and celebrity who are coming out against Israel. And this, I think, for the people that spin these things mm-hmm. in Washington mm-hmm. and Tel Aviv, this is very troubling. And your other guest is right to the extent that, you know, this will put a damper on certain fundraising enterprises, certainly. No country that I can think of is going to arrest Netanyahu if he travels there, though. And this is the problem with the ICC. As I said, there's numerous outstanding warrants that have been outstanding for over a decade, and nobody does anything about it. And those figures travel all over the world. They don't publicize it, but they do. So, I mean, this is a symbolic event at best, but it does speak to the fact that, you know, global opinion is just like overwhelmingly on the side of the Palestinians. I think people have awoken, people that previously didn't understand the occupation, they have awoken to the reality. You can't see the carnage that you see on social media, you know, all the platforms, and not be affected by it. People are horrified. And so, you know, one does wonder when op-eds like that occur in an establishment paper like The Guardian, what is really going on? Is Netanyahu really being thrown under the bus? Or is this a part of a more elaborate scripting of things to sort of absolve the United States for their part in it and replace Netanyahu with somebody else that will put a more moderate face on the occupation, which is what I suspect will happen.
Well, what about that, Robert? I mean, when we look at the establishment, as John was talking about, and, for example, the article by Naomi Klein, I mean, is it indicative, perhaps, of the fear of the anxiety that the powers that be have right now inside of the United States? When we look at these student protests that's growing day by day, and these kids, they do have a lot to lose. Some of them have been suspended, some have been expelled, rested so many things can affect their future, of course, over there. But they don't care because, as John has said, I mean, watching this carnage almost 7 months now, they just couldn't handle it anymore. So let's talk about the establishment and that possibility, that fear factor, because if this Gen Z really uniting in the way that it appears that they are, on the issue of Palestine, it could be quite dangerous for the U.S. regime. Your thoughts?
Yes, it could be, because the U.S. has been the main supporter of Israel for decades, gives Israel more aid than it gives to all the other countries it gives foreign aid to combined. It has protected Israel diplomatically from any accountability for its many war crimes and crimes against humanity. But we are, as Mr. Stepling said, seeing a major change now. The support for the Palestinians is overwhelming around the world. We see that even in some news media. We're seeing many, many more pro-Palestine articles and news articles about Palestine than we've seen in the past. Palestine is not being viewed on many so-called mainstream media outlets as the villain, as the perpetrator, and Israel is not being seen as an innocent victim. This is a major change when previously the Palestinians were always seen as the enemy, as terrorists, and Israel was simply, quote, trying to defend itself. We see now that is not the case. Some of us have known it for a long time. But between social media, which is what the Gen Z generation uses to connect with each other and to learn about what's going on in the world, through social media, the rest of the world is seeing the horrors, the deaths of innocent men, women, children, the slaughters, the starvations. They're seeing this. And so the United States is supporting it all. And people are beginning to say that this is wrong, as we see in the university campus demonstrations, which, as you mentioned, are growing every day. They're huge, they're strong, they're powerful, and the demonstrators are taking risks, yet they are opposing the U.S. imperial and colonial ventures in the Middle East. And they're doing this out of conscience and because it's the right thing to do. So it is a change, and it has the potential to impact U.S. governance.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, John, Robert talked about the change in some of the mainstream media. But I want to look at an incident that happened actually yesterday. That it was a correspondence dinner for some of these journalists in Washington, D.C. And then we saw protests actually outside of that venue. And basically people were saying shame, 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 because these mainstream journalists had barely talked about the situation that's been taking place for almost 7 months now. And it was very interesting to see these so-called journalists walking through the protests and not even looking left or right as people were shouting different things, especially as a journalist. It should show some type of perhaps empathy and curiosity. But do you think during this 6-7 months of this genocide, not only has the American and Israeli regimes been exposed, but also entities such as the media, mainstream media, been exposed more than ever during this time.
I think that's absolutely true. And that may be the most significant takeaway from this. I think more people, especially young people who were previously, you know, uninformed and trusted the establishment legacy media outlets for their knowledge of the world, they are suddenly recognizing that they have been lied to profoundly. And in a sense, there's echoes of the Vietnam War protests in all of this too. Now, there are contradictions, and this is what I find fascinating, because the police have brutally suppressed a lot of these protests on university campuses. And Israel is scrambling to put a correct spin on the whole thing. Ben Gavir said, we will send armed IDF soldiers to protect Jewish students at these universities. Nobody buys this. Nobody buys this. And you know, everyone knows Jewish students are not under any threat. The students have learned enough to understand what Zionism is, that this is a colonial occupation, and it's been funded and protected and enabled by the United States for over 75 years, and that the Palestinians have been subjected to just almost incomprehensible cruelty and deprivation for all of that 75 years. And so people are waking up to this, and the young especially, and yes, they see that these establishment journalists have been lying. And I have seen, you know, talk shows and interviews with the sort of pro-Israeli journalists being attacked, being asked very hard questions, and being exposed as dishonest and culpable in their distortions about this genocide. And that's something new. I've not seen mm-hmm. that before, and it's significant, I think. So yeah, that's a big part of this, where that goes and how long the US can continue to sort of speak out of both sides of its mouth, because the protests aren't going away. People understand what is happening largely, even if they're not politically mature or knowledgeable. They understand this is a genocide, that people are starving every minute. Children are dying. Children are starving. That the settler mentality is insane, fanatical. They were cheering the blockage of food into Gaza to feed starving children. This is not lost on the protesters. They mm-hmm. understand what is happening, and I think many, many people are truly shocked by it. Others, like us, are not shocked. We expect this from the U.S. But for many, this is a new truth that is being,
Let's look at that, Robert, the new truth that John just talked about, because we're looking at, for example, there were many people who, as he said, this has been their first exposure to a lot of this. And not only have, for example, some of these kids, they have seen the way that the police have cracked down on them, on academics. They have seen their country that says it believes in democracy, protection, the rights of women, the rights of kids, and all of that, totally ignore that when it comes to Palestine. So I want to look at, this is even beyond what is happening in Gaza, beyond the Palestinian situation. Do you think this is basically, we can say, an aha moment that will change the future and the direction? I mean, your assessment of what seems to be a major transition that's taking place.
Yes, these young students are going to be elected officials eventually, many of them. They're going to become lawyers, and they're going to be in positions of authority in the United States. And they are learning today some very valuable lessons about the hypocrisy of the United States government currently, about the fact that the news media is controlled by the government, and that it just simply echoes U.S. government talking points without doing the real journalistic work of finding out what's really happening, finding out the causes and the impacts of various activities. One of them, of course, being the resistance of October 7th, when that wasn't the start of this. That started in 1948. We know that. But many of these young people are only now discovering that, and they're horrified at what they're seeing and what they're learning, and at what how the United States government has lied to them through their government officials and through the corporate-owned media. So they're seeing this, and they're not going to forget. They're not going to forget these horrific scenes that are coming out of Gaza, and knowing that the United States has supported. They're not going to forget that the United States did not force Israel to provide humanitarian aid, and instead enabled the Israeli regime to starve children to death. And there are the pictures on that we're seeing coming out of Gaza from social media, not from the news, the legacy media, but from social media, will haunt many of us till our dying day. And this is going to impact these young students. They're not going to forget. And when they're in positions of authority, they're going to act accordingly.
Well, John, are we at a redefining moment in history where later people will wonder, how did mankind allow this Holocaust to happen? And also people will be asked, what did you do to try to help to prevent that genocide?
Yeah, I think I have said this before, others have as well, that in 100 years people will look back on these last few months and wonder, my God, why was nothing done? People just stood by and let this happen. There is a trickle-down effect in this, too. The Arab ruling class, people like the King of Jordan, the President of Egypt, they are being exposed as well. The public opinion is turned against them acutely in the last 4 months. And the same with the Gulf state monarchies. All of it is has changed the perception of the sort of establishment narrative. And that's why I say that op-eds like the Naomi Klein, this is a quick damage control and an attempt to change the narrative to somehow salvage a positive spin on the Democratic Party, on Biden's reelection campaign. That's a huge part of it. It's not going to work, but that's what I think is going on. They're not going to completely throw Israel under the bus, the United States, that is, but they may well throw Netanyahu under the bus and the settlers. That, I think, is quite possible. These people are just off the leash and unpalatable to 99% of humanity on this planet. They are viewed as homicidal maniacs, which is what they are. So I think there is a script being written. We're in the process of watching the liberal establishment in the U.S. create a new narrative that will somehow spin a picture of a new benevolent and tolerant Israeli regime. They're not going to get rid of Israel. They need Israel. It's always been the U.S. attack dog in the region. They don't want to give that up. But, public opinion and the protests, and it's not just student protests in the U.S. There was a massive protest in Spain the other day. Thousands, tens of thousands of people. And this is happening everywhere.
Right.
There was protests in Norway and all across the EU. All of it, overwhelmingly pro-Palestinian without question. So,
okay, and on that note, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we're out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me. Robert Fatina, author and journalist out of Kitchener, Ontario. John Seppling, author and commentator out of Indre, Norway. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 20th, 21st, and 22nd verses of chapter Naml.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
فَتَبَسَّمَ ضَاحِكًا مِّن قَوْلِهَا وَقَالَ رَبِّ أَوْزِعْنِي أَنْ أَشْكُرَ نِعْمَتَكَ الَّتِي أَنْعَمْتَ عَلَيَّ وَعَلَى وَالِدَيَّ وَأَنْ أَعْمَلَ صَالِحًا تَرْضَاهُ وَأَدْخِلْنِي بِرَحْمَتِكَ فِي عِبَادِكَ الصَّالِحِينَ
So Solomon smiled, amused at her speech, and said, My Lord, enable me to be grateful for your favor which you have bestowed upon me and upon my parents, and to do righteousness of which you approve. And admit me by your mercy into the ranks of your righteous servants.
وَتَفَقَّدَ الطَّيْرَ فَقَالَ مَا لِيَ لَا أَرَى الْهُدْهُدَ أَمْ كَانَ مِنَ الْغَائِبِينَ
And he took attendance of the birds and said, Why do I not see the hoopoe? Or is he among the absent?
لَأُعَذِّبَنَّهُ عَذَابًا شَدِيدًا أَوْ لَأَذْبَحَنَّهُ أَوْ لَيَأْتِيَنِّي بِسُلْطَانٍ مُبِينٍ
I will surely punish him with a severe punishment or slaughter him unless he brings me clear authorization.
فَمَكَثَ غَيْرَ بَعِيدٍ فَقَالَ أَحَطْتُ بِمَا لَمْ تُحِطْ بِهِ وَجِئْتُكَ مِنْ سَبَإٍ بِنَبَإٍ يَقِينٍ
But the hoopoe stayed not long and said, I have encompassed in knowledge that which you have not encompassed, and I have come to you from Sheba with certain news.
So, now that you have listened to the translation of these verses, you understand that through this group of verses, the Holy Quran has pointed to another height of the amazing life of Solomon. And somehow, the Holy Quran reiterates the event of Hoopoe and the Queen of Sheba. So, at first, this group of verses speaks about Solomon ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam and Hoopoe, whom he sought after, but he did not see it. وَتَفَقَّدَ الطَّيْرُ فَقَالَ مَا لِي لَا أَرَى الْهُدْهُدُ And he reviewed the birds. Then he said, How is it with me that I do not see the hoopoe? أَمْ كَانَ مِنَ الْغَائِبِينَ Or is it that he is of the absentees? So, the verse starts saying, وَتَفَقَّدَ الطَّيْرُ So this phrase clearly indicates that Prophet Solomon ala nabina wa alihi wa alihi salam was really careful in observing the circumstances of the country, observing his own army, observing whatever he controlled, and his government was controlled in a manner that even the absence of one bird was not concealed before his eyes. No doubt that the purpose of the bird here is the hoopoe, since in the continuation of the statement, the Qur'an adds, then he said, فَقَالْ مَا لِي لَا أَرَى الْهُدْهُدْ. How is it with me that I do not see the hoopoe? أَمْ كَانَتْ مِنَ الْغَائِبِينَ. Or is it that he is of the absentees? Now, concerning the fact that how Solomon recognized that hoopoe was not present among the gathering of the birds, some commentators believe, and they have said, that it was for the sake that at the time of his traveling, birds did cast a shadow over his head, and because of the existence of an opening hole in that vast canopy, he found out the absence of the hoopoe. Some others, however, have considered a mission for the hoopoe in his organizations, and they have said that the hoopoe was commissioned to find the places where there was water, and when the bird had gone to search for water, and he, ala nabina wa alihi wa alihi salam, found it absent. Now, however, this statement that at first he said, I do not see the hoopoe, was continued by adding the fact that, or is it, that he is of the absentees. This points to this matter that whether the hoopoe is absent without having a plausible excuse, or it has been absent with a plausible one. Now, we will talk about this group of verse more after a short break.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
So, dear listeners, regarding the 20th verse, we said, وَتَفَقَّدَ الطَّيْرُ فَقَالَ لَمَالِي لَا أَرَى الْهُدْهُدَ أَمْ كَانَ مِنَ الْغَائِبِينَ. And he reviewed the birds in the very first place. He said, how is it with me that I do not see the hoopoe? Or is it that he is of the absentees? لَوَعَذِّبَنَّهُ عَذَابًا شَدِيدًا أَوْ لَأَذْبَحَنَّهُ أَوْ لَيَأْتِيَنِّي بِسُلْطَانٍ مُبِينٍ. Certainly I will chastise him with a terrible chastisement, or I will slaughter him, or he brings me a clear reason for his absence. Now, we said that it is really important to control every angle, every aspect of your governance. So your government had to be controlled in such manner that even the absence of one bird is not concealed before your eyes. This is how Solomon controlled his army. An organized, ordered, powerful government has to put all movements, all activities, all actions, all reactions that happen in its country and realm under consideration. Prophet Solomon did the same thing, and it must not neglect even the presence or absence of a bird, even the single absence of one unit, of one person, of one man or woman in charge will completely destroy the aim, the object, the objective, I mean, and ordinary agents, sometimes an ordinary agent who is absent will cause the destruction of a government. And this is a great lesson. And furthermore, Prophet Solomon did not stop there. He said, I will definitely chastise him with the hardest and strongest kinds of chastisements if he does not bring me a plausible excuse. Some other commentators have said that the objective of hoopoe here is a particular hoopoe. their reference is the existence of Hudhud and the Alif and Lam at the beginning of the Arabic word Al-Hudhud, as well as the Hupo's power of anthropology and its theologically ability, I mean, that he had. But the explanation of this meaning will be offered later on. But the point is that Prophet Solomon decided that he will definitely chastise Hupo if he does not bring him a good excuse. We'll continue our discussion later on. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As the world celebrated 30 years since the end of apartheid in South Africa, protesters assembled in their thousands in London calling for an end to the Israeli apartheid and echoing the global demand for a ceasefire in Gaza.
We are here to call for the victory of the Palestinian struggle, that for us it means the end of this genocidal war against Gaza, against the West Bank for us, and against all the Palestinian people.
It's not in our name. We are selling, England is selling arms to Israel, and it's got to stop. They're creating genocide, and we don't want any part of it.
At the destination of the march in Hyde Park, speaker after speaker, including Northern Ireland's First Minister Michelle O'Neill, called out the American, European, and British government's complicity in the Israeli regime's crimes. The march came only weeks after the British Prime Minister gave a Downing Street address condemning extremism and saying the protests risked descending into mob rule, and his counter-extremism commissioner claimed London was becoming a no-go zone for Jews on Saturdays. That received pushback from a number of Jewish community leaders and members. And so the tussle between pro-Palestine marchers exercising their freedom of speech and those who want to cancel those marches continue.
The main theme of this protest, as with the previous ones, the killing of so many civilians in the Gaza Strip and the continued UK military and diplomatic support for the Israeli regime. There's also an element of defiance, too, to all the attempts that have been made to disrupt and to antagonize these protests. The protesters here are saying they aren't going anywhere and that they will be coming back again and again as long as the massacre continues. Saeed Poreza, London.
Free, free, free.
In South Korea, Saturday, protesters of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza marched past the U.S. embassy and through Seoul's downtown. Abuse and arrests of pro-Palestinian demonstrators at American colleges resonated with South Korean students.
Politicians and the media, in their attempt to justify such a crackdown, slander the Palestinian Solidarity Movement as spreading anti-Semitism. But history will remember them as accomplices in genocide.
This is the 32nd rally of South Korea's people in solidarity with Palestine, protesting against Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. As more and more reports surface outlining Israeli atrocities there, concern here grows over the situation in Rafah and Israel's increasing attacks against civilians there.
Participants call for a stoppage to Israel's imminent ground invasion of Rafah. At Seoul National University, a professor is under investigation for defacing a pro-Palestine poster after harassing a student. Such pressure tactics are seen by some demonstrators as an opportunity to set the record straight.
The professor, who's a Zionist, obviously, is trying to silence our voices about speaking up about against the genocide that is happening in Gaza and the occupation of Palestine. But at the same time, I feel like this is a chance for us to raise more awareness about what is happening and about why Zionism is, you know, why Zionism is bad.
Meanwhile, at the United Nations, the United States became even more isolated, vetoing the April 18th resolution to extend full membership to Palestine, with several U.S. allies, including South Korea, voting in favor. Frank Smith, Seoul.
While most Syrians are suffering from difficult economic conditions due to unlawful sanctions imposed by the United States and its Western allies, the U.S. has intensified its delivery of Syrian resources from the areas it illegally occupies in eastern Euphrates. Civil sources from Al-Yarubiya in the Hasakeh countryside reported that the U.S. occupation forces have transported dozens of trucks and tanks loaded with wheat, gas and oil to its bases in Iraqi territory in the past few weeks.
According to the Ministry of Oil, the total losses in the energy sector until 2022 amounted to more than $107 billion, including over $24 billion from oil and gas theft, over $3 billion due to infrastructure destruction, and over $80 billion in indirect losses resulting from the necessity of compensating for the missing resources through imports.
The U.S. occupies Syrian territory under the pretext of fighting the Daesh terrorist group, which Washington itself created.
The United States claimed to establish an international coalition to fight Daesh, while in fact they assassinated those who defeated this organization and fought for the freedom and safety of the Syrian people, including the martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and several Iranian generals, in addition to targeting the Syrian Arab army.
Syrians believe that the main reason for the United States' occupation of Syrian territories is the theft of its wealth and the destruction of its infrastructure. Syrians say the U.S. wants to weaken the state and its army, but furthermore to push the Syrian people away from Palestine and the excess of resistance in order to protect the Israeli regime.
They're doing this just to increase the prestige around the Syrian people, to suffocate the Syrian people more, to increase their suffering, and plus trying to diminish the Syrian role among the resistance countries in the region.
Syria's government, as well as other countries, have repeatedly condemned the ongoing violations by the U.S. as they blatantly steal Syrian wealth before the whole world without consequences, violating all international laws and forcing over 90% of the Syrian people to live below the poverty line, according to UN.
Despite the unjust Western sanctions on Syria, the theft of its national resources, and the occupation of its land, the Syrian people's commitment to the Palestinian cause has grown stronger. Syrians are also determined to expel the U.S. and Israeli occupiers through resistance. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
America, America.
Amid rising tensions in the international waterways and the departure of several Western warships from the Red Sea, thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country in yet another strong show of support for Palestine.
We took to the streets to protest for the women and children who are being killed by American and British weapons. Our naval forces will firmly continue operations as long as the aggression against the people of Gaza continues. And if the Yemenis are given the opportunity, there will be thousands of them rushing to fight for Palestine.
The Yemeni people are supporting and standing with our brothers in Gaza, and no sanction or action by United States and the United Kingdom will stop the Yemeni people. Yemeni people in Sana'a and other cities continue and demonstrate weekly.
Protesters endorsed the Yemeni army's recent naval operations against Israeli-bound ships. They urged their armed forces to continue attacking the Israeli regime and its Western benefactors.
We support our naval and aerial forces operations, and we urge the army to continue destroying the enemies and do not allow any American, British or Israeli ship to pass through our waters. Our army has targeted more than 100 ships, and the number will double unless the killing of the people of Gaza stops. We are ready to go and fight for the Palestinians in Gaza, and we promise that we can make Israel disappear.
In the latest development, the Yemeni army spokesman announced the targeting of the Israeli ship MSC Darwin in the Gulf of Aden with multiple drones and naval missiles. The Yemeni armed forces have also launched several ballistic missiles toward the Israeli-occupied city of Eilat.
Every week, Yemenis hold fresh rallies across the country to express their solidarity with Palestinians amid the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. People here vow that they will continue their support for Palestinians until the full liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
On Friday, a new national transport strike caused major disruptions in several Italian cities, including Rome, Milan and Naples. The four-hour industrial action called by the trade union FISA Confil affected local bus, metro and tram services, with strike timetables varying from city to city. The strike coincided with the super long weekend of April 25th, or Liberation Day, a time when tourists flock to Italian cities. Confil FISA said that the nationwide strike is in protest over a number of issues ranging from job security and better working conditions to safety in the workplace.
Decades of wild privatization policies and budget cuts due to austerity measures have resulted in an overall precarization of the labor market. Workers' rights have been eroded, with severe consequences on wage security and living conditions.
The public transport sector, together with the health sector, has been the number one victim of budget cuts by consecutive governments under the pretext of promoting efficiency in the public administration. This strategy has not worked, as the current little public funding of private transport groups has to include a profit for the group itself. Thousands of bus drivers have been bearing the brunt for this enormous budget downsize. They work more hours for less money. A bus driver earns roughly 1,600 euros a month, but half of their pay goes into house rent or loan repayments.
And then there is the economic crisis that is plaguing Italy. Italians are grappling with serious economic hardships. The cost of living due to high inflation and high energy prices is biting hard in Italy, with an increasing number of families struggling to make ends meet. At the end of 2023, the number of people living in absolute poverty rose to almost 6 million, about 10% of the population, its highest level in about a decade. This, as about 6 more million Italians live in a state of relative poverty.
Our institutions are covering up the reality of the situation. All prices have been dramatically going up since the start of the war in Ukraine. The cost of fuel and that of tomatoes, vegetables, have gone up big time. What have not gone up is salaries and wages for the vast majority of the population.
Earlier this week, the European Parliament adopted a reform of the EU's rules for national debt and deficits. Some analysts have slammed these new rules, saying that they will once again impose a fiscal straitjacket on member states' national budgets, promoting short-term thinking and not safeguarding public investment in social welfare. Max Civili, Turin.
As Iran marks the anniversary of the failed U.S. military operation in the central Tabas Desert, people in the country say the Sands were the agents of God. A memorial ceremony was held in the capital, Tehran, with the event highlighting the budged American operation, in which U.S. choppers crashed in the desert. On April 24, 1980, the U.S. military carried out a cover operation in Iran by the order of President Jim Carter. The operation, dubbed Eagle's Claw, failed due to major sandstorms in the central Tabas Desert. The failed operation resulted in the death of American soldiers. Iranians believe the Sands were the agents of God.
The botched American mission was an attempt to release 52 staff of the U.S. Embassy, known as the Den of Espionage, who had been held after the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
The incident of Tabas was a helping hand from the Almighty God to defend the great nation of Iran. And also the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, said the Sands were appointed by God. Even the Sand rose in support of the Iranian nation. And that bitter incident happened in the American regime.
Unlike the previous years, this year's memorial isn't just a history lesson. It is also an opportunity to reflect on Iran's recent anti-Israel retaliatory attack, dubbed Operation True Promise, which showed the true power of Iran's military forces. Since the failed U.S. Operation Eagle Claw, Iran has boosted and upgraded its defense capabilities and can now stand up to all kinds of threats.
And civilians will not hesitate to retaliate from our own land. The True Promise operation was executed in a specific manner which is classified right now. We use scores of drones, crews, and ballistic missiles with proper timing to successfully penetrate the complicated Israeli air defense systems and strike our targets with pinpoint accuracy.
Iran has shown that threats from its enemies have only strengthened its will to defend what belongs to the nation. And now, it seems that the West has woken up to Iran's military powers after Operation True Promise.
Reza Hashemi, Tehran.
A recent United Nations report predicts that approximately 16 million individuals in Afghanistan will be struggling to gain access to food this year. To get a better understanding of the situation, we visited a family in Kabul facing acute food shortages. The Rukhsana family's daily struggle mirrors the difficulties faced by countless households across the country.
I lost my husband during the war in our hometown. I don't have a male provider and I can't find a source of income. One of my grandkids polishes boots, but that is not enough for our family. It has been a long time since the last time we had rice and potatoes in our home. We barely eat two meals a day, which is stale breads and tea. My children are asking for soup, and I feel so bad as I can't make it for them.
Our situation here is so difficult that we can hardly survive. It is because there is no income or food to eat. If we eat during the day, we should sleep with empty stomachs at night. There are people who skip meals to feed their children. Some families beg for food but fail to find some because almost no one has a better situation. We used to receive some aid from the United Nations World Food Program, but now it is gone and has left people to their fate.
According to the UN report, the Afghan population cannot fulfill essential needs, including health care, food, employment, and shelter. Some local experts argue that the current hardships faced by Afghans stem from prolonged foreign interventions and conflicts, suggesting that those involved bear a responsibility to aid in the crisis resolution.
I think all the misery and economic hardships that Afghans are going through today stem from the shameful U.S.-West intervention and wars in Afghanistan. If they had let us build constructive economic relations with our neighbors, we would not be so broken today. The U.S. and its allies are responsible because they came and destroyed our infrastructure here, and on the other hand, they imposed economic sanctions after their withdrawal. Today, they cannot turn a blind eye on what they have created.
As the international community's attention shifts away from Afghanistan and the foreign aid continues to shrink, the Afghan people still hope for a means of survival that will pull them back from the edge of crisis. Millions of Afghans are facing emergency levels of food insecurity and malnutrition. The UN agencies warn that the situation is expected to worsen rapidly if urgent action are not taken by the global community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism, as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent, as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, habits. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I welcome you to the program A to Z. Well, we want to talk about habits and how they play their role in our personal development and how they play their role in the society. So what is a habit? This is the first question. Well, whenever when we do something, when we perform an act, it has an effect on our self. It has an effect on our soul. Well, when we repeatedly do something, this inner condition which makes this performing of this action easier is called habit. Habit is an inner condition which makes you do something easily, which makes you do something with pleasure and easily. So habits gradually